Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas, if that's what you celebrate, or Hanukkah, if that's what you celebrate, and we're all getting ready for the new year. 2020 has lots of promise for being a very exciting year. The number in itself is exciting. There is a special kind of person who seeks the more authentic experience, the genuine moment, the sweet, fresh air escaped from all the noise, a return to what's real and what matters most. Often that person feels both called to a purpose and frustrated by the world around them, right on the edge of giving up. That same person may also feel brief flashes of immense power or sustained surges of energy, punctuated by drawn-out periods stalled in the doldrums. This life experience is much more common than most people want to admit, but there's positive energy avalanche available in fear, distress, anger, or sadness once we start to uncover it. Today's special guest, Bill Protzman, is here today to address those fundamental, heartfelt questions to inspire, delight, and demonstrate the power of music as a tool for self-care. The mission of the company he founded, Music Care, is to remind people of their built-in ability to use emotions for good and offer proven practical power of music as a tool for self-care. Bill is a living example of how music can be life-saving and life-affirming. And we're going to talk about just how he does that. And I'm going to bring him on so we can get started and talk about all the wonderful things Bill has to share with us today. Good morning, Bill, and welcome.
Good morning, Randy. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Why don't you give us a background of exactly how this all began? Because I know you have a musical background, but how that started and how it integrated with self-care.
Sure. The musical thing is so beautiful because music is one of the ways that we human beings can experience emotion safely. And when you're the person responsible for making that music, it's sort of your gift in a way, but you have to be very careful with that gift, because what you're offering is authentic emotion. And it sounds like your favorite song or whatever. But if you, as the person who's making that emotion happen, are in any way standing in front of the clear expression of those emotions, it's going to interrupt the experience of the person who's listening to it. And we all know how that sounds. I mean, if you have a favorite song, you're used to hearing it on the radio or listening to it, and then you go to a concert or something and somebody plays it and it doesn't feel quite right. Have you had that experience? That's
yes.
Where the emotion isn't quite there. It doesn't come across in the way that you want it, right? So that it's important for performers to reach deep for the emotion and actually offer it to an audience, to a listener, authentically. Our job as musicians means that we have to experience those emotions pretty deeply. We have to know what they're like. We have to really feel them in order to be able to convey them honestly, authentically. So as a kid, I started to do this, and you get feedback. You know, audiences tell you what's going on, or you can see it on their faces, or if there's a sad song, you cry. I mean, you can actually get responses, so you know if you're doing this in the way that you want to. You know if you're conveying the messages, the emotional information that you want to convey. And over many years of doing that, I've discovered that not only does that practice speak well, of course, when you're performing, but it also speaks internally, and it comes in, and you realize that you can experience these big emotions in safety, whether it's fear or anger or sadness or even joy. Those are emotions that can be found in all music. And as a musician, feeling them while the music is happening is a very easy thing to do. It's pretty safe. There's no requirement that you go and act out on any of these big emotions. They're just there. They're just present. And as a musician playing them, they become more friendly, more familiar. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does.
Even listening, we can do this. So as a therapeutic practice, I've gotten pretty good at performing emotions. But by the time I was in my 30s and got into therapy, I had no idea how to explain this. I had no physical language for it except music. So as I began to explore over the 20 years since then, what it's like to integrate these emotions more consciously, let's say, into the human scene, I realized that it went way beyond performing and listening. It actually went to a self-care practice, or being able to be with myself without music, but with a big emotion, was something that was very empowering and very safe, provided that I didn't take any action and go out there and do stuff with it. That experience is hugely powerful. And as a guy growing up in America, we're sort of taught to stuff our big emotions, to not let them show. And that's fine. But we still need to be able to feel them. We need to be present with them. That's a huge part of being in the moment. You know, you can be in the moment, but if you decide to eliminate some of the stuff that's coming your way in that moment or intentionally push it aside, well, I think you're cutting yourself off from so much richness that could be there with you in that moment. And I'm not talking about meditation here. I'm just talking about being fully present. If full presence requires you to be angry, hey, that's just an emotion. But there's power in that emotion if you don't let it take over and run things. And if you can experience it in safety, the way music lets us do, oftentimes you can transform that deep emotion into something that's very powerful and do great things with it that you wouldn't do if you just, reacted to it. So we're talking about a very deep response here that's something that human beings are built to do, feel emotions deeply, and that we're actually set up to be able to leverage to take that power and turn it to something good.
Okay, so you had issues that were concerning you, or that you mentioned therapy. So you went into therapy years ago for was it depression or anxiety, or what were you going through?
Well, at that time, I was so new at it. I had no idea what was going on with me. And the first therapist, I'll never forget this, said to me, Bill, you're an angry young man. And I thought, well, I'm not angry. I know I can be angry, but I didn't think of myself as having a chronic anger problem. I thought of myself as having a chronic depression problem. I thought I was sad a lot. You know, I spent a lot of my life just sort of being melancholy. And over time, I discovered that part of, at least for me, part of that anger that the therapist saw was because I had built a practice of stuffing my emotions so deep that they started to leak out. And this is, you know, this is me. My job is to express emotions. But when I'm not at the piano, back then I found ways to ignore them, to intentionally suppress them, which isn't great therapeutic practice. So all of the time since then has been about learning to unpack those deep emotions in ways that are safe and not always related to music, but using music to get at those emotions so that I can feel them and then using the energy in that feeling to be able to do good. That's a long process.
So
at least it has been for
okay.
me.
So is it in the creation of the music that you are expressing this? Or it's in your interpretation of the music or the mindset that you put yourself into while you are performing or playing the music. Where does that fit in?
It actually fits in when I'm least in the way. There are lots of people who talk about how your job is to be the doorway through which things pass. And in the music world, if you've got the technique down and you're confident with your instrument, and you know the music that you're going to be playing, it's easy to step away from that, sort of let autopilot take over. And in that place, all you do is show up with the feelings themselves. And all the rest of it is just mechanical. If you do it well, it's the feeling that comes through, not the technical brilliance or the complexity of the music, or even if it's creative, the new thing that you're doing. Yes, it's come through creatively for me as well. I've got an album out there that was entirely spontaneous music, just one take, some say channeled, but just music that was played spontaneously. And I think in that creative act, there was a lot of this going on, a lot of Bill stepping out of the picture and allowing the music to be there. And as a classical piano player, I play music over and over. It's part of being a classical pianist is to repeat the music many times. And I always have to find something new in it. And with this approach, there is always something new. It always goes deeper. There's always something more down the rabbit hole, if you will.
Now, for us as listeners, the listeners today, some of us will be musicians and some of us may not be. And so if we're not creating music, how do we explore this for ourselves?
What a phenomenal question. I love your insight here, Randy, because most of us are listeners. Let's face it, at least in America, our culture is not one where we spontaneously break out into song just around the dinner table. So as listeners, we're experiencing the same emotional stimulus that musicians do. It's hard to play an instrument and not feel the feelings that are coming from the very music that you're playing. But as listeners, so when music reaches us, we sort of have a choice. If it's music that we enjoy, we say we like it, right? And we play more of it because it's stuff that we like. There's also the kind of music that we don't like. And in many cases, our response to music we don't like is to change the channel. You know, find something else, skip, down thumb, whatever it is. But all music has information for us. And it may be that the music that we don't like is the music that has some really rich information that we could unpack and learn from, and perhaps use in our daily experiences. So I like to go to the place of metal, or is a good one. People either seem to really love heavy metal or they don't. And that's fine. There's no judgment on that. But if you're someone who loves heavy metal, you've got to wonder why. And the studies they've done on this range from people who find joy in heavy metal, whatever the reason, to people who just find rage and anger in it. Isn't that remarkable? Same music, that kind of range of response. And both groups like it, just for different reasons. Isn't that remarkable? I mean, here's one thing with that kind of giant range of responses in it. And why is that? What is it about music, right? And for listeners, all of us have a little bit different music taste. The music we love is most powerful for us. So if you happen to love metal, it's got some power for you, whether that's inspiring you to joy or inspiring you in what other people might think of as a scary way. Fear and anger, they tend to be big, scary emotions, but they can be very useful if you need energy. If you're trying to move, for example, or get something unstuck. So perhaps the people that find fear and anger in the music are doing that to help them move off of a place, to get out of a funk, to expand in some way, even to be creative. And that's like, that's science. There's science on it. It's remarkable to me.
That is remarkable. I like pretty mellow music. I mean, of course, there's times where I really want a beat, an upbeat something, you know. But, I'm a diehard 70s classic rock person.
I love it.
And I that was my era, and that's what I reach for. There are some things, new music, that appeal to me, but for the most part, that's where I'm stuck. Is it nostalgia that keeps us there?
You know, I would hesitate to say, no, you're not stuck there. I think it's a beautiful place. The music that we come closest to is music from our adolescence, mostly. It's different for those of us who are making music, but there's always stuff that, like, goes back to our first love song or whatever it was when we were teenagers. That's important, you know, and that genre, whatever those genres of music were that minded us when we were growing up, they're just deeply inside there. So yeah, they are of course connected to memory. And the nostalgia for our adolescence is part of that memory, of course. You can develop that kind of nostalgia and memories around other things as well. I know people who late in life found whole new musical genres they didn't know about, and they became very important genres that sort of stuck with people throughout the rest of their lives. We're always listening to music around the house here, and one of the things that we've found recently, just over this Christmas season, is Norwegian folk music and Norwegian carols, and there are some incredible a cappella vocal groups that sing, of course, in languages that you can't really, unless you're fluent in them, understand. But the harmonies and the music is so beautiful. It's just, it's amazing to me that we hadn't heard this music before. It things like that, you know, continue to surprise and delight me as we go through life. So I may be developing new music that will have nostalgic memories of holiday 2019, later years from now. Who knows? It's wonderful to know that this is possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of music out there that we're not even aware of, and there's music in every culture. There's music in tribes. Everyone has a certain kind of music that they're that they've grown up around and are used to. So, how do we use music for self-care? How do we actually navigate this process?
This is a really great question, isn't it? There's so many ways into music. Concerts, of course, sitting and listening in a chair. The idea behind music requires us to stop and to focus and to bring attention. And, you know, sound is going to work on us. Sound and rhythm are out there. If they're in your background right now, they're working on you in some way. But to become sort of more fully present of that, to go to a concert or sit with some headphones and listen to a whole piece of music with intention. But this is an unusual practice in many ways. I talked a little bit earlier about how in certain indigenous cultures, people just sing spontaneously. They're always making music, doing something. And we aren't quite like that here in America, but we do welcome the opportunity to bring some music in. I don't remember the last time I went to a sing-along, but they're still out there, and sometimes in concerts, you can actually engage in making music with other people, which is remarkable, too. One of my forms of recreational music making that's fun to do is a drum circle. If you've ever been to one, give it a try. It's an interesting experience, and it isn't quite as intimidating as you might think, because anybody can play a drum, and it's a lot of fun to do. So between concert going and then all the way over to music therapy, there's actual licensed board certified individuals that can treat you as a therapist with music. there's this huge range. So somewhere in there is our ability to use music for self-care. And when I say self-care, that means that whatever the modality, it affects you physically, mentally, emotionally, and even spiritually. I don't know many modalities that open us to change in all four of those areas. And those are huge areas. It's interesting to think that the music that you're using to study, for example, is also inspiring you in some way and also helping entrain your heart rate and breath. And you thought you were just using it to do some hard math problem or whatever it is, right? But at the same time, it gives you this peace and focus. There's so many ways it just comes in. So knowing the music that you need is the best way to start using music for self-care. And in many ways, that's so obvious. You know, if you're going for a jog and you want some running music, it's there. If you're going to do some studying and you want something intellectual, it's there. If you want to do some dancing, we've got music for that. House music is amazing. EDM, there's so many incredible ways to use music for movement. And then, of course, the music that is there for us to find inspiration and the spiritual aspects of music. So whatever the sort of primary focus of the music is, you can also be confident that it's affecting you in all these other ways that are also very beautiful and very useful. So becoming conscious of all of the opportunities in music lets you listen to it much more differently and lets you bring your focus to it in a way that you wouldn't normally just put on music in the background and listen to it. It becomes very present. Not exactly like walking through an art gallery, but it's a little bit like that. You really need to bring your focus to something and allow it to work on you to start to gain information about what it's doing for you.
Okay. So it's mindfulness. Music with mindfulness is really what you're saying. We are, we're listening and we are applying it to how we're feeling, how it's making us feel, what it's bringing out in us. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yes, that's close. So mindfulness is kind of a fuzzy word. It's gotten to mean a lot of different things. And while the mind is an important component of bringing your attention to music, you need to know, too, that the music is working on you way outside the brain. In fact, it probably works more on us outside the brain than it does in, if you will. So the intention is the part of mindfulness that I'll go along with. Bringing your intention to something and say, okay, I'm going to put on headphones, I'm going to sit with this music, and I'm going to see what happens. That's where the mind checks out, because what you want to do is to connect yourself emotionally. And yes, it's a kind of emotional intelligence, but that's a fuzzy word too. It's more of an emotional honesty. What do I really feel right now? What are the feelings that are coming up for me? And that's where the power is. It's not the interpretation of the feelings. So by that I mean, let's say we're listening to something that's scary. Scary music is out there. It's in the movie theaters. So you put on some scary music and go, oh yeah, okay, I'm going to listen to this scary music now and I'm going to see what information it has for me. Well, that's close, but what if you put on the scary music? So I'm going to put on the scary music right now and I'm going to see how scared I can get. Do you see the difference there?
Yes. Yes, so, I can. I can definitely see the difference.
Yeah, so why would I want to be that scared? which is an obvious question. So, well, how deep does your fear go? I mean, there are times where we can be terrified. Trauma is a part of the human existence. It seems like trauma is one of the ways that we can supercharge our growth. And oftentimes, it just takes being really scared to get to change. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt.
I mean, you probably experienced. Yeah. So yeah, if you can use music to tune up your fear receptors, that becomes a very important thing for you the next time that you're scared by something, because you're expanding your fear range. So fear isn't always abject terror. Sometimes fear is, oh, I should save for retirement. That's a good idea, right? So I don't have money, no money at the end of my life. Both are fear, but can you see there's a big difference there? And the idea of using music allows you to experience that big range so that you're familiar with is the next time something knocks on your door and says, hey, I'm scary.
Okay.
You've got a range of options there to respond with that you wouldn't have if you hadn't practiced them. I know it sounds crazy, but practicing fear with music is a phenomenal way of being able to use that energy instead of just reacting to it all the time. Because even if it's big fear, you can say, hey, this is the big fear that I needed to get me off the dime to do this thing, instead of just saying, oh, this is the big immobilizing fear, I'm done.
Right. So it's coming, if the picture is coming together for me. So what we're doing is we are using music to connect with our emotions so that we learn to be comfortable with feeling them. Is that basically what you're saying? We're learning to be comfortable with those emotions that we may not normally be comfortable with, and we can do it through the use of music.
That's exactly where it starts. And you know, this is silly, but many of us don't connect well with our big emotions. We really don't. There's an overwhelmingness to being that connected to your big emotion. And because we like to think that we can, you know, reason our way out of it, we tend to try to ignore them. And that's not so good. That's the practice that I learned early on as a kid. You know, don't be too afraid, Billy. Don't be too scared. Don't be too angry. So that very narrow emotional range, well, it may be socially acceptable, but it's not real psychologically helpful. And music is one of the safe ways where we can go and explore that territory and learn about the richness that's there and help become more skillful when it comes to our own emotions, whether they're triggered or not.
Got it. I understand. So do we start with what inspires us, what we have this natural attraction to? Or do we start there and then we begin to branch out with things that make us uncomfortable? How do you recommend we go about doing this?
One of the ways that I like to start with people is to sort of come up with our individual top 40. And it doesn't have to be top 40, it can be top 10. But the music that you love is the music that's closest to you. So we start there and kind of look at that music. And my question about the top 40 or top 10 that people bring to the table is, so what's the range there? Is it all joy? Or is it more balanced? Does it have a joy and a sadness component to it? Does it include fear and anger? I mean, obviously our music is music that we love and we like. But I like to talk about a story that where I asked this a person, gosh, what's the song you have for joy? And this was a reasonably educated, well-rounded, culturally sophisticated person. And the response I got was, well, my joy music is Amazing Grace. And I said, well, what's your sadness music? Turns out it was Amazing Grace. And I thought, okay, I can see where this is going. What's your fear music? It was Amazing Grace. If you have the same music for all four emotions, you know?
So, you're not getting very far.
Yeah, you're not getting far. And this is, I want to take nothing away from people who live in the light and the joy. That's fabulous. But as a resonator, if you picked up your guitar and you wanted to play music, and the guitar only could resonate for joyous music, well, you cut yourself off from about 75% of all the available music you could play on the guitar. But if the guitar simply didn't work for fear and sadness and anger, it wouldn't be much of an instrument. It did sound pretty bad. And our human resonators, everything about us resonates. We resonate for all these emotions, this huge, wide variety. It's like a rainbow of emotions, and they're non-binary. You can be scared and happy at the same time. You can be sad and happy at the same time. We have this marvelous ability that for some reason we've just sort of decided not to use. So opening up that envelope beyond joy, is a good thing to do. Why is it good? Well, I mean, you ask the psychologist about that. But if you're in a place and you want to make a sound, and sound is composed of like tension and release, right? So you've got to have a low in the sound wave and a high in the sound wave. That vibration needs tension and release. You couldn't make sound if the only thing that you experienced was release. There'd be no tension, and without tension, you can't have sound. You can't have light. You can't have heat. It's part of who we are in this universe, to be vibrational beings. And to choose to resonate for only one thing that we like and leave the others behind, that'd be a pretty flat existence. And of course, I mean, let's face it, we all want to be happy. And that's fine. Yeah, you're going to be happy. And you're also going to be sad. And you're also going to be scared. And you're also going to be angry. I'm just using the top four here. That's part of how we've stayed alive for millennia. Those emotions have helped guide us like guardrails away from the stuff that's dangerous. You hear the tiger roaring, and you get the family in the cave and start the fire. That's a good response to fear, you know? And we need to be cognizant of those things and respond to them without stuffing them, because there's great information there that can help us, as you pointed out, do things even creatively, inspired things, as well as doing the things of just minding the store, you know, keeping the lights on. That's a part of it too.
You know, I'm thinking back to childhood, and music, it was very interesting what music did for me, because I started playing the guitar at 6 years old. And for me, it was my escape. I would go into my room, play guitar, sing, write songs. That was my escape from my crazy, dysfunctional home, angry home, you know. And it used to take me to a different place that I couldn't necessarily get there, you know, without it. But at the same time, music was something that rang throughout my house, because everyone in my family was musical. And we would gather around the piano every night after dinner, and we would sing. My mother was a pianist, my sister was a pianist, and everyone else, you know, we just sang and we harmonized as a family. And it was one of these Norman Rockwell kind of paintings, kind of things. It was the joy that our family had. Probably the only joy our family had, and then it all fell apart and went into chaos. So I'm thinking about how complicated that musical background was for me, but I did learn to appreciate classical. I did learn to appreciate show tunes. And so those are some of the things that I do hold on to. And as I'm thinking back, you know, and I'm thinking back to classic rock, I do also have these other things buried inside of me, and they bring back positive memories at a time yeah. where there was very little positive.
Isn't that fantastic? Our systems sort of hang on to the lifeline that we had back then. And
yeah.
they still serve us today. You know? Like you said, you're going to go back to classic rock. I came by the Beatles a lot later in life because I was busy playing Beethoven or something. And the music of the Beatles, especially in that movie that came out yesterday, you get the full cultural awareness of how music is minding us in ways that go far beyond the just show up at the concert and have a good time. They're so deeply ingrained in who we are as people. And it's marvelous that you use the guitar as your place of refuge. I found that too, Randy. As a kid growing up, piano was my place where I could go and be with big emotions and safety.
Yes. And then I reached a point where a lot of this, I guess I was in my 30s or 40s, and a lot of this pain began to sort of rise to the surface, and I didn't know how to deal with it. So I could always play piano by ear. I'm not excellent, but I could do it. And so I began writing songs, and I wrote songs that expressed tremendous amount of pain and spirituality that I was not even in touch with. So I completely get the relationship. And when you bring up Beatles, it's interesting because the Beatles for me was my childhood. I grew up in the 60s. And that's when the Beatles were, I had an older sister and she was always playing them. So when the Beatles got a channel on Sirius Radio, I was like in heaven, because it took me back, I knew every word to every song. And of course they had, you know, they went into the 70s. Yeah. So for those of us who are listening, is there a specific kind of way to do this? And I know you said to start with what resonates with you and work from there, but you have a program called Music Care. How do you work with people in that program?
So there's many ways to do this, of course. I love the individual one-on-one because we can sit like we're doing now and talk about our music and investigate what it does for us, fill in the holes where there's some emotions that aren't completely resonating for music that's right there in front of your consciousness. So the basics of understanding this whole music thing a little bit deeper, that's a part of it. Many ways in. If you're not one-on-one, there's one-on-group, which of course is wonderful. And thanks to technology, we can do this all over the internet. But at some point, I put together a course, of course, as we all do, so that people could go through and investigate this on their own. And that's a phenomenal way of doing it. But there are two aspects of it, whichever way it goes. There's this fundamental kind of learning and reminding and re-engaging with music in the way that it speaks to us through the emotions. And then there's what you do with that. So one of the marvelous things that you can do with music is you can use it to add emotional content to any practice that you need. And let's use, for example, resilience is a big one right now. So resilience is one of those things where there are lots of emotions that are packed up inside it. And if you're called upon to be resilient, all of those emotions are going to be within what you do. Now, what might some of them be? So resilience, of course, is acting in the face of some calamity, some tragedy, something that requires you to go above and beyond. If you're in that place, you need the energy, of course, to be able to do the action. And that physical energy, as you know, can be sparked up by music. So if you're responding in some physical way, passing buckets down a fire line, for example, the music that you use can help enhance your physical performance. Resilience has also got this mental component of keep at it, you know, tough it out, make yourself, you know, have the intention to go through to the end, whatever that looks like. And of course, there's great music for that as well. And there's also the inspiration, you know, where you're here in this place or you want to be able to do something good for people to help if you're responding to a natural disaster. There's a connectedness that comes when people respond in resilient ways, where humans who don't know each other join together to do something useful. And then, of course, there's also how you feel about it. And I kind of left feeling for last, because in the situation that is resilient, I mean, what are the things you might be feeling there? Just think about it. If you're listening, just think about that for a second. If you've been resilient or might have to be, what are the feelings involved? And how would you engage authentically? You needed to bring your emotional connection to your resilience. Then, of course, some of them might be joy, perhaps, in helping a difficult situation, or some sort of sorrow that the thing that caused the difficult situation happened. What are some others as you're thinking about resilience? What comes to you, Randy?
Resilience. That's a tough one. I don't know that I've connected with that. I've connected with that. I mean, maybe the one that comes to my mind is the disco song, I Will Survive. And there's there's also a Tom Petty song. Gosh, what is the song? There's a Tom Petty song that's really the same way, and I can't think of it right now. But
it's got that
as far as
in it.
Yeah, no, the message is to don't let I won't back down. That's the song. I won't back
that's
down.
Awesome.
Great song. Great song. So yeah, when you listen to these songs, it inspires you to be resilient. You know. But I was also there was also something that you said along there, where something that affects a large group of people. And what came to mind there was when Michael Jackson did We Are the World, it somehow, that connectivity of all these different voices singing it about the world situation and bringing our attention to it, when you hear that song, it connects you again every time. So much is coming to mind as you're talking. I really hadn't thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is why it's so fun doing what I do, because it is basically a job of reminding people of how to do this thing that we do automatically. You know, we're just set up
there. Right.
And our conversation right now is just illustrating that. So, yeah, so in a situation that's resilient, bringing that emotional component by remembering music that helps you be in that place and do what you need to do, it's so incredibly powerful, because we've all been in places where whoever is the other person across the counter has no emotional component, is totally flat. Whether that's on the phone to tech support or in the checkout line where it's like, thank you, Bill. There's just no emotional content there. And to bring that emotional content in just changes everything. And you'll know when you have a checker who gets it, or when you're on the calling the cable company or whatever it is, and the rep on the other end just has this humanness about them, and you don't know why. Well, they're connecting emotionally, not to you, but to their own job, to bring their own emotional content to the phone. That's incredibly valuable. And the studies have shown that it makes all the difference. You know, thinking about gratitude, it's really flat when somebody just says, thank you, have a nice day, as opposed to bringing their emotion content, right? You just know. And that's part, there's so much science on this, but that's part of what trips our mirror neurons. It's just, there's so many ways that this works. And the beautiful thing is that the rest of us, that isn't the mindful part of us, the rest of us doesn't know whether the situation is real, happening in the present moment, or not. But we still engage as if it's real. So if you can bring, if you can bring We Are the World to your resilience practice, all of the emotional content that We Are the World holds for you enters into your practice of resilience. You can't help it. So it makes sense to be very well acquainted with the emotions in We Are the World, because the better that you've got those locked in, the more authentic your resilience will be. And that's true for gratitude and just any number of the human attributes, what I call the best practices. It's true for all of them, because that emotional content is what animates us to be grateful, to be thankful, to be resilient.
Does music, listening to music that resonates with us or makes us comfortable, take the fear out of experiencing those emotions? Because so many people that I work with are victims of emotional child abuse. And so their feelings are locked away behind thick, thick walls. And many people are afraid to experience those emotions because they don't know how they're going to feel. So is it safer to experience emotions through music?
I believe it is. I've seen people who begin to play music, unlock emotionally, or just listen to music, unlock emotionally. And it isn't something that we're very familiar with here in the West. I mean, there are other cultures where it's quite familiar. And I think you were so fortunate to grow up in a family that had that kind of approach to music. Shall we say it's like a group approach to music, where it was safe to be around the piano and sing. But there are frightening things where you haven't felt very deeply before, and music can unlock those. And when it does, sometimes for the first time, that can be a scary experience. It's easy to say, yeah, don't be scared, because we like to say that in our culture. But I'm going to say it the other way. When you're triggered by music, whatever the feeling, be with that, because even if it's the first time for you, it's just music. You're just listening to it. And yeah, it might bring up some really deep stuff. It might bring up fundamental traumatic experiences and memories. But that's okay, because that's how we move forward. And being willing to be there in the dark place, like Luke Skywalker going to, you know, fight the Phantom that's actually his memory of Vader. That dark journey, the dark night of the soul. This is a fundamental sort of theme in human evolution here, shadow work, if you will. And yeah, it's scary, but it's supposed to scare us. We're supposed to be scared into transformation by that stuff. And yeah, right. It sounds a little bit strange for me to be saying that, but you're in good hands, people. You know, when you listen to music, it's triggering you to all these wonderful emotions. And in a few minutes, it's going to trigger you to a whole bunch more wonderful emotions. And if you're allowing that to happen, you're getting your mind out of the way and just being with the emotions, especially if you're sitting in a chair under headphones, don't operate heavy equipment when you're doing this, please. Give yourself the permission to just be with those emotions. They have such beauty for you and such incredible opportunity for you that you couldn't find unless you did the practice.
So we're talking about beautiful, beautiful music. Tell me what, because I have not been able to figure this out, what do people get out of rap music? What is that doing for them? It sounds like it's bringing out a lot of anger. What exactly is rap music doing? Do you know? Have you thought about that?
What a great question. Well, I can talk about what it does for me, and I think a little bit based on what it's done for the culture, we can talk about it that way. So I get what you're saying, Randy. Rap music is scary for a lot of people who don't get it, who aren't like culturally in it in some way. And in that sense, rap, of course, was new for me when it started to happen. I mean, when did it happen? In the late 60s, we started to get rap for the first time?
No, I think it was more like the 80s. I think it was more like the 80s, yeah.
80s, but, it came up. Okay, so there's been there's musical poetry for a long time and stuff like that. But so the idea of the hip-hop culture is, first of all, look how incredibly wide it's gotten. There's so many people who are engaged in this music, whether through dance or through performance. There's the marvelous inspiration that goes into freestyle, which is basically just rapping improvisationally. That's incredible to me. I mean, bringing language together with words that you're choosing in the moment to tell a story, that's beautiful. So there's incredible technical expertise and inspiration that goes into this music. Okay, so let's talk about the words. The words can be scary. But one of the things that rap is doing is giving a huge swath of people the ability to experience anger and fear in safety. There's music that's speaking to those emotions. And yes, there's always the concern that people are going to go out and act out on the music. And yeah, there was a concern back when rock and roll was new that if you played it backwards, it was the music of the devil. And, you know, Beethoven.
Yes.
You know, had his issues because Mozart was the way classical music was, quote, supposed to be, and he broke the mold. So, you know, innovators have always been sort of not well-liked by the people who don't get it, and that's fine.
That's right.
We can give some of that rap and hip-hop, too. But look at the amazing, the beauty of being able to offer anger and fear in safety to so many millions of people. That, I think, for me is one of the, I don't know, effects of having rap with us in our day and age. There's people who can listen who don't go out and act out, you know? And to be honest with you, when I need angry music, rap is some of the best that I can find to sort of give to those feelings, you know?
Yes. Yeah, then, it does. It brings a lot of anger out. So that tells me almost that that it's an angry generation. Why are we so angry? Why are that generation so angry?
I'd like to say we're all in a sort of peak anger right now. It's leaking out everywhere.
Mm.
And we see it in all the isms that, you know, are in the world. It's a little bit scary to know that we're allowing that fear, that anger to come up across the board. And I don't want to, you know, rap isn't all angry. There is some really beautiful love poetry that's available in rap. One of my favorite new sort of emerging musicians, a woman named Brittany Howard, who is mixed race, grew up in the South. And she sings a song called Goathead. And Goathead is a song that told the story of how when in the morning they would go out to the car to go to the school, sometimes there would be a goat's head somebody put in the back seat of the car. And obviously as a racial slur. And yet this is part of the music that she's singing. And I feel the hatred in that act, but I also feel her frustration with it and her wanting to move beyond it. So even in this music that many people see as hateful or as angry, there's hope. And it's amazing to me that in the same music, you can have hatred and hope. Just like in blues, you know, you can have sadness and joy.
Right.
Music does Absolutely. That. It gives us the non-binary, to use a word, the non-binary opportunity to feel these things. And how that, yes, within fear, within hatred, there is also hope. Within fear, there's love. That, I think, is part of the central connection that all of us need to make more deeply to our music, whatever that music might be. I mean, whether it's, you know, Beethoven or Snoop Dogg, or, you know, pick somebody that's speaking to you, and then really allow those emotions to be in you and see what information they have for you. And yeah, it'll become familiar. Hey, maybe even rap will become your new resilience music. Who knows?
We will see.
Yes.
So, Bill, in the last few moments that we have, I know that that you have won awards for your music, and you've also written a book. So, in about 2 minutes, can you just tell us some of your successes and also how we contact you for, if we want to work with you with Music Care?
Sure. Easy place to find me is at quest.musiccare.net. And everybody these days knows what a quest is because it's part of every video game in the world. It's quest.musiccare.net. And there's a lot of explanation there and free stuff and different things like that. But I love the unexpected nature of what music brings. And one of those things was from ancient history. I recorded Amazing Grace and put it out there when mp3.com was new. And sort of forgot about it. It took forever to upload things via dial-up back then. This was a big one, like 15 megabytes. And later that year, somebody said to me, hey, Bill, you know what? You're number one on mp3.com. Well, this is crazy. How do you do that? You know, I had no idea. And it was Amazing Grace, and it was number one for a while. Then years went by, and I got an email or a letter or something. It said, Bill, your recording of Amazing Grace has been included in the permanent collection the Library of Congress. Well, that's crazy. The same record. So the unexpected nature of exploring music more deeply is just such a thrill. And to be able to do that in ways that empower us in our regular lives, even if you're not musical at all and just listen to it, what an opportunity it is to work with people who want to do that, want to bring the next sort of leverage to their game, right? It's all around, and we resonate with it, so why not expand yourself in that way? And like we're talking about with resilience, bring full emotional honesty to everything you do. What power could you have if you were able to do that?
And you also have a series on YouTube that is called Performed for You, right?
I do, yes.
Okay, so we can listen to that. We can listen to that. And there's a book... And you wrote a book on Amazon called More Than Human, The Value of Cultivating the Human Spirit in Your Organization. Is that related to music?
Well, of course. You can kind of see where that's gone. We were talking about resilience. And I think that music is a great way to bring emotional honesty to all of the practices that we need in this world, whether it's guiding a company or guiding a family. There's phenomenal ways of integrating music in that. And More Than Human is about getting to the depth of your spiritual attributes, the things that we like best practices, honesty, of course, integrity, appreciation, discretion, gratitude. We've mentioned some of them. And so it's a little how-to book for how to get a handle on that. It doesn't have anything to do with music. It just sort of is an advocacy for, hey, here's a great idea. Let's start doing more of this. Let's be more kind, and here's why. Let's be humorous, and here's why.
Wow. So I'm going to end on that because that's a great way, very inspirational way to end the show. Thank you, Bill. I'm glad we were able to connect. I'm glad that I know that we had rescheduled, and I'm glad that we figured out a time to do this because it's really interesting. This is a very different kind of show for me. Yeah, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you. So thank you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. So we are out of time, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. I will not be seeing you or speaking to you until after the first of the year, January 3rd. So I wish you all a very, very happy, safe new year. And as I said in the beginning of the show, all good things for 2020. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.